Good afternoon. It's not morning. I'm glad to see that the kids have left because what I'm about to talk about may be given a rating of PG-13. It's okay for Noor to be here. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Some of you here know me and my family, some of you do not, but I will give a recap, a summary of what we have been doing for the last few years, and it'll also serve as context for what I want to talk about today. 4 years ago, Danya and I and our three kids, just three at the time, left Jerusalem to work at an international school in Kenya, Nairobi, Kenya, called Roslyn Academy. There, I work as the director of operations, and Danya works as an ELL teacher, that's English Language Learner Teacher. Our three oldest children attend the school, and we live on campus. It's a beautiful school, lush and green, about 40 acres in size, and is situated in the northern part of the city in a rather affluent neighborhood. Located several hundred meters from both the United States Embassy and the UN regional headquarters. It's an international Christian school with grades from kindergarten through 12th grade and runs an American curriculum. With nearly 700 students, we have more than 50 nationalities represented. Our staff are made up of roughly 100 local Kenyans, who mostly comprise the operations team and whom I direct, and about 70 expats, most of whom are part of the academic team who are teachers. How is it that we ended up here? Well, this was actually our second expedition to Africa as a married couple. Prior to having kids, Danny and I spent a year working in Congo and Sudan. My experience had been in the context of disaster relief, and hers in reconciliation. For me, I found disaster relief to be what you might expect. Adventuresome, exciting, shocking, exhausting, and heartbreaking. But ultimately, I found it rather disillusioning. Not sure that it was as effective as it could be. I also came to realize that the disaster relief machine requires disasters to generate funding for its own existence. Anyway, we came back to Israel to rest, and I found a job as the business manager of the Anglican school over here on Hanavim Street. And Danya continued her work with Musalaha. I worked as a school administrator at Anglican for 8 years, during which time life took on a cyclical feel, as anyone working in a school setting can attest. Work life became routine, but the concept of how to do effective disaster management stayed with me, and the idea of prevention and risk reduction began to grow in me. In 2010, 7 years into the job, I decided to begin a master's degree in disaster and emergency management, with the vague idea that I would look to eventually get out of school administration and transition into international disaster management with a focus on prevention rather than response. I became restless at work and applied for an administrative job with Oxfam in Jerusalem, a British development NGO. They called me in for an interview, and although the interview went well, they informed me later that they had decided to postpone the hiring of the position for another 6 months. Okay, I thought, I'll continue doing what I'm doing and maybe apply to the position if and when it's reposted. We had three kids now, and our marriage relationship at this time, which historically had had its difficulties, was doing particularly bad, as some of you closest to us knew. We had been to counseling, and though we experienced a temporary reprieve, we had spiraled down again and weren't sure whether we could keep it together. We were now at the end of our reserves, discouraged and generally without hope. We went through the motions of life. I kept my focus at work and afterwards concentrated on my studies, but was rather disengaged in my family affairs. I have come to realize that this is a default action of mine in how I deal with anxiety. I feel myself shutting down, I want to escape, and when I physically can't do so, I want to sleep. Some here might be able to identify with this, but I think others experience anxiety very differently. They might have difficulty sleeping and feel the need to talk with others in order to process. This was closer to Danya's experience. She focused on our kids and drew support from extended family and friends. In fact, without the incredible loving support of this wonderful community here at Narcisse, I truly do not know how we would have survived. So it was in this context that in February of 2011, I was contacted by this school in Kenya and invited to apply for the position of Director of Operations. The option at this time wasn't worth considering, and I nearly ignored the email. But because I knew the superintendent of the school, whose sister had been a former classmate of mine, I felt that I at least owed him a response. So I formally thanked him for his interest in me, but declined the offer. It was a no-brainer. After all, I wanted to get out of school admin business, and Danny and I certainly were not at a place where we could handle the stress of an international move. Oddly, though, the superintendent was not satisfied with my answer and with persistence wrote me back, wanting to know my reasons for turning down the job prospect. I told him that Africa was not in our present plans, and when and if it ever became so, for me it would not be in a school administrative context, but it would likely be more in the broader context of disaster management, and this only after I finished my master's. And without explaining our marriage issues, I did tell him that we had a strong church community here and would be reluctant to leave. He countered that I could complete my master's while working for them, and what better location to do a thesis than the hub of development work in Africa. While there, I might network with various NGOs and ultimately transition from the school into one of these organizations. And the school itself prides itself in being a loving Christian community. It was one of their core values, in fact. The family would thrive here, he promised. Just give us 3 years. Please consider it. So even though the timing didn't make sense, I presented the offer to Danya. Sure, she would just give me that "you are so out of touch with reality" look. And I probably was. Now, she has her own story to tell her here, but I'll just summarize. Surprisingly, although not immediately, she felt it was the right thing to do. Through her prayers, she felt that God was directing her to say yes to this decision. How else would she be willing to give up her incredibly important support base of family and friends and risk following me to Africa at a time when we were relationally barely holding things together? It didn't make sense. She was advised by a number of wise, loving people that it was not a good step to take. But for some reason, she felt that the Lord was telling her to go. So we decided to accept the offer. We were about to return to Africa, this time with 3 kids. I had, of course, put my master's on hold as we prepared to leave because of all that was involved in wrapping things up here in terms of work and house. And then, of course, the adjustment required time getting used to a new living and work situation and so on. And the master's was on hold for more than a year. Soon after we arrived and settled into our new home on campus, Kenya began making news on the global level. A terrorist group from neighboring Somalia called Al-Shabaab, an affiliate of Al-Qaeda, began to expand their operations beyond piracy. Some of you may have seen the movie Captain Phillips. This is the same group. They started doing cross-border raids and abductions of international tourists visiting Kenya, as well as kidnapping international aid workers. One such aid worker was a former Roslyn Academy teacher named Jessica Buchanan. She had stopped working at Roslyn 2 years earlier and taken a job with an NGO in northern Somalia. In October 2011, while working in northern Somalia, Jessica, along with her colleague, were abducted at gunpoint and held for ransom by a group of Somali land pirates. The Roslyn community was shocked and concerned, former colleagues and students regularly meeting to pray for her. For 3 months, she was held outdoors in deplorable conditions, starved and terrorized by more than 2 dozen gangsters. One of the parents in the school and the husband of one of our teachers was the regional FBI officer. and he, through his connections and his abilities, kept tabs on Jessica's situation and also kept the U.S. government informed of her circumstances. As her health deteriorated, and ransom negotiations dragged on, her captors grew increasingly impatient, and the U.S. government feared for her life. On January 25th, 2012, 93 days after her abduction, the Navy's elite SEAL Team 6 rescued her and her colleague unharmed. She has since written a book entitled Impossible Odds. And if you're interested in reading her story, you can find out much more in that book. The Roslyn community rejoiced in her rescue, and she came to the school soon afterwards to meet with friends and students and expressed her gratitude for the constant prayers on her behalf that sustained her through the horrible experience. As you can imagine, it was very moving and emotional, an emotional time as she addressed the school in the main auditorium. In response to Al-Shabaab's cross-border raids, which had started hurting the tourism industry, Kenya sent forces into Somalia to create a buffer zone between the two countries. But the invasion did little to stem the cross-border attacks. On nearly a weekly basis, small-scale attacks were happening around the country, mostly in northern Kenya, but also along the coast and in the capital city. And the targets were usually churches, hotels, bars, and bus stations. I had by this time completed my coursework for my MA in disaster management and was considering now what topic to pursue for my thesis. I had envisioned finding something that would enable me to do research part-time and allow me to continue working at Roslyn. I was, after all, only 2 years into my three-year contract, and I felt committed to the school for at least this period. I engaged in conversation with the World Bank regarding doing a research consultancy for them, and they suggested doing a post-drought assessment in Somalia. For obvious reasons, this didn't seem right. Maybe in a younger, more reckless, more single life, I might have considered. It would have been a full-time project and would have required me to quit working at Roslyn. I dismissed this option and began trying to get my foot in the door with UNISDR, which is the United Nations International Strategy for Disaster Reduction, hoping to do some sort of research for them that could double as my thesis. Then, one Saturday afternoon in September 2013, Somali gunmen attacked an upscale shopping center in Nairobi called Westgate Mall, one frequented by expats and Kenya business and political elites. The mall was owned by Israelis, by the way. I was at home when I received the alert on my phone that a terrorist attack was happening at the mall 4 kilometers away from the school. I immediately sent out a mass text message to all of our staff asking them to clarify their location and their safety. Texts came in fast and furious, all saying they were fine and not at Westgate. Then I received one from one of our Korean teachers and her husband saying, "We are hiding in Nakumat, a department store in the mall, among the mattresses. What is happening?" I began to text the FBI officer that I mentioned earlier, who was already at the scene and deeply involved in the situation. From him, we determined that there were a number of our students and their families, about 25 individuals, in the mall at the time of the attack. He instructed me to tell the Korean couple to stay exactly where they were and they would be rescued. And shortly afterwards, they were. In the initial hours following the attack, the stories of escape by members of our community were miraculous. A mother and her three small children hiding behind a cardboard display, the CCTV cameras showing them and the militants in the same frame, and the militants not seeing them. Another parent and his family hiding in a closet until a policeman forced the door open, the father ready to attack him with a piece of wood he had found. The gunmen initially opened fire on anyone they saw in order to gain access to the building, and then as they went through the mall, on finding an individual, asked them to recite a verse from the Quran. If they could not, they were shot. By the end of the four-day siege, 67 people were killed from 19 nationalities and 175 wounded. From Roslyn, two parents had been killed, and their children, both Roslyn students, were severely injured. One student, a Chinese kid, was and continues to be Danya's pupil. The Roslyn community was in shock, along with the whole of the city. A neighboring school had lost four of its students. People were frightened, angry, suspicious. Talks in the news concerned whether the government was capable of protecting its civilians, and began calling for dramatic action, such as emptying Somali neighborhoods and forcibly deporting people. Some of our friends began to ask us, Danya and I, how do we handle this kind of fear, grief, and anxiety, knowing that we had come from a similar context and a land that was all too familiar with this type of thing? As I mentioned earlier, I felt committed to the school for at least the 3 years of my initial contract, but I had also come to realize that just about any research topic for my thesis was going to require me to quit my job. Up until now, I had been thinking about something related to natural disaster risk reduction. In light of recent events, however, I began to think about another topic, man-made disasters, the topic of soft targets and terrorism. A soft target is a relatively vulnerable facility, such as a mall, a church, a school, and differs in this regard from an embassy or a police station or a military installation. I began to shift my thinking away from natural disasters to perceptions around vulnerability to terrorism, not a topic I am particularly attracted to, but one that I realized was becoming very relevant to my current situation. So this became my thesis topic. Using Roslyn Academy as a case study, I began interviewing subject matter experts, the FBI officer, a U.S. federal government emergency management consultant, an ex-police officer who had written a book on terrorism in schools, and so on. I surveyed our staff and parents to get a feel for level of fear and anxiety for the purpose of measuring risk perception. Over the next several months, I lived and breathed this subject, trying to measure terrorist risk perception, whether actual or perceived, and ultimately for the purpose of coming up with strategies to reduce threat and alleviate fear. You see, as the director of operations, I was also in charge of the security of the school. I had already applied for a soft target grant through the U.S. government and received a large sum to upgrade our security. A few months after the Westgate Mall attack, the American Embassy contacted me for a meeting. They told myself and my superintendent that their experts had identified us, Roslyn, as the most attractive terrorist target in the city among those representing American interests. We were, after all, a Christian school with an American curriculum and an international clientele base. And our close proximity to the other defensible targets, such as the embassy and the UN headquarters, only made us more vulnerable. As you can imagine, I began to feel very anxious as I dealt with this subject material every waking hour, during the day implementing upgrades to security, and in the evenings and weekends researching the topic of soft targets and terrorism, and immersing myself in the anxieties of our community members. I began to absorb the collective fear of the community and its anxiety, and I felt increasingly responsible for the well-being of members, not only their physical well-being, but now their mental and emotional state. There were times that I felt physically nauseated as I contemplated our situation. So consumed did I become by this heavy subject that I found it difficult sometimes to do menial tasks or make simple, unrelated decisions. My mind began to feel like mush, unable to concentrate, and I found that all I wanted to do some days was sleep. And sometimes I did, except that now my dreams were being affected. I think you've all heard of Corrie ten Boom, a Dutch Christian who helped many Jews escape the Nazi Holocaust during World War II. She says, "Worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but it empties today of its strength." Isn't that a great quote? Let me read it again. Worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but it empties today of its strength. Can't we all relate to that, even if our stories have less drama than hers? I can. Anxiety can be crippling. We are no longer effective when we allow anxiety to take hold of us. But I also experience at times the strength that comes with committing my stresses to the Lord and persevering. A few times, not as many as I wish had occurred, when I was especially low, I would take a break from my studies of work and withdraw and say a prayer to the Lord. God, you've got to help me. I can't do this without you. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I no longer know what I'm doing. My life is yours. Please accomplish what you will through me. And then I'd go back and try again. To make a long story short, I did complete my study and my thesis in May of 2014 and presented a copy to the school for their files. But I also kept a copy close by as a reference guideline for continuing the improvement of school security. The research process had revealed that the experts and regular stakeholders at Roslyn both had perceived our risk for attack to be high. The process helped me identify a number of risk-reducing strategies that would effectively improve our security and, in theory, also lower anxiety levels. Over the next year, with the help of the U.S. government grant, we implemented many of these strategies, but I won't tell you the details. In April of this year, just 3 months ago, in the early hours of one morning, Al-Shabaab gunmen attacked a university in the north of Kenya. They systematically rounded up students, asked them whether they were Christians, and executed them if they were. By the time the Kenyan government forces responded and had secured the area, 147 students had been killed, each one a confessing Christian. The tragedy of this event is colossal. Young people cut down at the beginning of their adult lives. Another soft target hit, and this time a school. A fact that I'm sure was not lost on anybody in our community. But as I look at the situation in Kenya and watch it rapidly become a security state, where civilians have lost their carefree spirits and live increasingly in fear, I realize that what is happening there is not unique to Kenya. Nor is it even that bad compared to other parts of the world. Kenya, at least for the most part, embraces Christianity. Most Kenyans are professing Christians. They are not a threatened minority. You recently had Canon Andrew White here, and you know about the extreme difficulties faced by people, particularly minority Christians in Baghdad. And as you read the news, and as Danny mentioned just now, it is impossible not to grieve over events in Iraq, Syria, Turkey, Yemen, and now Sinai. And this place, too, has certainly had its own share of violence and tragedy. At times like these, it often pushes the observer or the contemplator to wonder, where is God in all of this, or has he turned his back? So much hatred in the world, violence, suffering, chaos. How do we cope? How do we not despair at the injustice we see? Well, if we are fortunate enough to live outside of the realm of violence, we can simply ignore it and focus on our own busy lives. And this option is not necessarily a bad one and easily taken by most people. But if you are in it or near it or are concerned by it, how do you handle the fear that grips the back of your mind? The anxiety that plays with your emotions, the grief that makes you want to cry out. How do you handle the stress that makes you want to shut down and forget or become frenzied and ineffective? Our friend Will Pong said something to us once that has since become Danya's motto, and she has several times quoted it to our children as they have lain in bed unable to sleep. You are immortal until the day that the Lord decides to take you home. Which is true. Our lives are in his hands. Colossians 3:1-3 says, if you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things that are above, not on the things that are on earth, for you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Isaiah 26, 3 to 4, you keep in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord is an everlasting rock. The more we keep our minds on God, the more we trust him. The more we trust him, the more peace we have. This requires constant, conscious effort and is not natural or easy for me. It's a struggle. But I have started to learn that as I am able to actively set my mind on God and on the things that matter to him, the things that expand his kingdom, his plans and purposes, the more peace I have and the more purpose I find in my own life. Sometimes it only seems to take shape when you look back later, as I am doing now. But while you're in the challenge, things seem out of control. And I guess this is where the trust aspect comes in. I'll close with the verse I started with. 2 Timothy 1:7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. That's a mind that is at peace. I used to think of that verse and contrast fear with love, which we should do. Perfect love casts out fear. But when you think of anxiety and how it plays with our mind, I like now to contrast that verse with a sound mind. He has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Power to be effective and purposeful, motivated by love and the ability to think clearly. Thanks for the chance to speak today. We head back to Kenya on Monday. Please remember the Minor family in your prayers as we begin another school year. Also, I'd ask that you would remember Roslyn Academy and the people of Kenya. We look forward to having Gary and Sharon and family visit us this week as well. And thanks for your time.